Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, this program is all about small business. We have a new report on this vital economic driver, and here to talk about entrepreneurship in America is Global Head of Community for 5R, Brent Messenger. Brent, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm going to talk about the first question, then turn it over to Dan, because he's far more familiar with you than I am. But I guess my first question is, what is 5R, and what about your report?
Yeah, so Fiverr is a global marketplace for digital services for freelancers and small businesses. So it's a service that's available anywhere in the world. It's a global platform. We're in 150 countries. There's a transaction every 3.7 seconds somewhere. So it's a huge marketplace. The digital services that we're providing, as I said, are for small businesses and entrepreneurs, things like graphic design, social media, logo design, voiceover, video editing, anything that can be delivered digitally that a small business needs, you can find on Fiverr.
Really? Dan, I'm going to turn it back over to you. You used them before, and you know them much better than I do, but I'm glad they're with us.
Yes, so am I. It's a pleasure to talk with you. My experience was I'm an author, and I wrote a children's book, and I was looking for an illustrator. And your company name came up, and I said, I've never heard of these people. So I put out an inquiry and actually got an illustrator that I worked with. It was really strange. I'm worked with this particular woman over the internet who was in Mumbai, India. And we worked extremely well together in my first children's book. And when I decided to do a second one, I went back to her again. And she's worked with me on the illustrations, and we're now working on a third book together. What was amazing to me about your service, and I know I'm taking some of your time, I apologize, I'm just trying to help the audience understand my experience. What impressed me about your service, what you said in the beginning when you introduced Don, your company, that you can do a lot of different things if they're done digitally. And I was very skeptical about the idea of being able to work with a graphic artist over the internet, never seeing them directly, simply using email to communicate. And it was a phenomenal experience. I could see where you could be growing by leaps and bounds. But what I would really like to talk about now, after I've given you this wonderful 2-minute commercial, is to me. So tell them how they can get a hold of your organization on the internet.
Right. So, thank you for that. That story you told, by the way, is a pretty common story. And it's actually one of our favorites here, is hearing people that are doing something that's a passion or creative project, and they find a partner, particularly one that they can collaborate with over and over and over again. As you probably learned, there is a little bit of sometimes apprehension about engaging over email and describing your creative vision. But then once you establish that connection and you share that common language and you have a style and an aesthetic, you can keep using it. So that's a great story. So thanks for sharing that. We're at Fiverr.com, Fiverr.com is the marketplace. Again, any digital service you can imagine, you should take a look.
Right. So let's talk about the survey that you conducted, because we're always interested in information that has something to do with small business. So tell us about the reason you conducted the study, what you were looking for, and then what was your outcome?
Yeah, so, you know, as you mentioned when you set this up, I'm the global head of community here at Fiverr. That means, you know, my interest is in better understanding our community, the people who are using the service, the customers who are coming to our platform, and really getting underneath the superficial stuff and understanding what makes them tick. So we created this report, and we were trying to better understand the issues that were propelling small businesses in general and entrepreneurs toward, you know, success, and what policies were holding them back. So we surveyed 1,000 of our U.S.-based marketplace customers and just kind of asked them questions about big economic issues, startup roadblocks, costs, safety net, anything you can think of. And really what we found was that a lot of the things they were talking about were not the things that were the things that you hear about coming out of Washington or coming out of local politicians. So issues of, for example, trade or taxation, these were not the big things on their mind, believe it or not.
Well, I believe it. I wonder, as you were talking there, since you're a global company, why did you choose to do a survey with the American entrepreneurs?
That's a great question. So I would say, you know, first and foremost, the largest part of our marketplace is in the U.S.
Okay.
The customers that come to our site, the majority are U.S.-based, as are a large number of the sellers. So, yes, it's a global market, but the U.S. is our core market, and this is where we're, you know, having great success and really trying to understand the marketplace. And it's so complex these days, you know, so it was to us seemed to be a great place to start.
So one question that I want to follow up with is to ask you, are there significant differences between entrepreneurs in other parts of the world than the United States?
Boy, that's a great question, and it's something that we think about a bit, but we haven't studied specifically. But, you know, the one thing I can say, obviously, is that economic conditions make it a little bit different. Access to broadband makes it a little bit different. You can imagine the places where they don't have strong internet access, it makes it very hard to participate in a digital platform like you described. Obviously, you collaborated with someone in Mumbai. They obviously had adequate internet access, and they do in India generally have pretty good internet access. But places where they don't, that's a problem. So some of the hurdles that you might find in America, you might find even more so in other parts of the world. The basic sort of threshold things, cost of living, access to internet, things like that.
Good. Let's talk about your survey. How many questions?
Sure.
What were the things that you're when you pull the survey, you have a bunch of throwaway questions, and you might have three or four of what you're really looking for. So what were you really looking for in the survey?
What we wanted to know the way we kind of framed it was what are the barriers, you know, what are the startup roadblocks, and how do you prioritize them? So this is it, we were just trying to get at the very simple thing, which is what matters most to you. And I think the thing that's interesting, really important to kind of note in all this is, you know, there are 28 million small businesses across the United States. You know that. 23 million of them are non-employer small businesses. What does that mean? That means that they are very, very small, one-person, two-person shops. A lot of these are the kind of businesses that are accessing Fiverr because they're trying to establish their brand, get their logo created, create a digital advertisement, create their social presence, all of these things, create their website. So they're on Fiverr trying to do that. So what we really wanted to understand was what's holding them back? What can we do to help them, really? You know, as we're sort of shaping our perspectives on policy, how can we become a voice for these entrepreneurs to help propel them forward? So what we discovered, like I mentioned, it wasn't issues like trade. You know, it wasn't issues like, bringing back manufacturing jobs or coal jobs. It wasn't necessarily tax reform. The things they were interested in were the things that were directly impacting their day-to-day lives. Cost of living, number one. Access to startup capital and capital to grow their businesses. Reliable broadband, which I mentioned a minute ago, even though it was a U.S.-based survey, access to reliable broadband still a problem for our community. Creating more competition in the economies and markets was also important to them. On that note about broadband, one of the things that we learned that was a very important finding was that these people weren't necessarily concentrated in the big cities in the U.S. In fact, many of them were throughout the country. So in rural areas, people are on Fiverr. They're using, you know, they're building their small business and they're trying to create a global company for themselves, but they're not in New York or they're not in San Francisco or Los Angeles. There are other places. So access to reliable broadband, kind of a big deal.
I'm one of those non-New Yorkers. I conduct several small businesses here on an island in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, that sounds fantastic. But yes, I can imagine reliable broadband being a problem for you. And frankly, you know, I think cost of living, it's important to everybody. So it's not necessarily a surprise that's important to small business owners. But it is an interesting disconnect with, again, the sort of noise we hear out of our elected officials, be they in Washington or even our local districts. They're often talking about these big issues and saying, I'm for small business. I want to spur the economy along. Let's talk about trade. Let's talk about taxes. But the little guy is talking about where the rubber hits the road. How much does it cost to live in the locale they live in? You know, how can they get the small amount of money they need to get started? Why is access to capital, you know, only available to few and the people in the power centers? Those are the things that are on their mind.
Then I want to jump in here and ask a question off the where you are. But how'd they come up with the name 5R? And can you spell it out with your website for people?
Sure. It's F-I-V-E-R-R. It's Fiverr.com, F-I-V-E-R-R.com. The name is kind of funny. It's originally started out as a marketplace where people would do things for $5. And I think the original idea behind it was, what would you deliver? If you could deliver something digitally, what would you do for $5? This is 7 years ago. So the company has transformed quite a bit since then. And in fact, there is, you know, the entrepreneur, the freelancer that's on Fiverr providing these services can charge anything they want. Very few of them, you know, charge $5 for anything anymore. That's kind of an antiquated idea, but that's where it started. So that's where the name originated from.
Well, I have another question, but it will have to wait until we hear from one of our sponsors. Then we'll be right back.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're here with the global head of community for 5R, Brent Messenger. He's here to talk about a lot of things, his survey, which I found fascinating. I know Dan did, but I'll ask one more question and then turn it over to Dan. But I guess, what is the most popular usage of your site, and how did that come about?
Boy, that's a great question. So, and it's also a challenging question because it changes, the sort of top categories, the most access categories changes relatively frequently. But I would say a lot of the digital marketing services are incredibly popular. We recently launched a category where people could engage with a freelancer who will develop a chat bot for them. I don't know if you're familiar with chat bots, but companies use these for expediting customer service. So we launched a chat bot category, and that's incredibly popular. People are excited about that. You know, a lot of people do voiceover on Fiverr. That's something that that people have a need for when they're doing a marketing video or something like that. Lots and lots of logos. Companies looking for logos starting up will purchase a logo on Fiverr. So, you know, the most popular sort of shifts around, but those are a couple of them.
Dan, all back to you.
Thank you. Brent, you, in thinking about your business model, you're kind of like a specialty store like Macy's, for example, who sells out floor space inside the building for clothing and shoes and jewelry and perfume, and takes a piece of the action when the merchants sell something in their store. Is that how you're compensated?
That's an interesting analogy. Yeah, it's a marketplace company. So I would say another analogy would be something like Amazon, for example, where we have sellers who come into our marketplace and they offer a service. Again, they can price it any way they like, but they, you know, when they sell it, then we take a percentage of the transaction. So it's a marketplace company. The one thing that makes us a little bit different from our competitors, we say that we have productized services. And what that means is someone will say, I will do something for you, you know, start to finish. I will complete this project or task for you for a set amount of money. Some of our competitors in the freelance marketplace space, you know, they'll help a customer engage on sort of an hourly basis. With ours, it's project based, so productized services.
So what I did when I used your service in working with the artist, I told her what my needs were, and she gave me a price per illustration and a specific time frame of when the project was going to be completed, which was important to me because I was working with a publisher and I wanted to meet a deadline. Let me go on. Not really ask you a political question, but it may have some political implications. Don and I started this show. We had another show, and we basically abandoned that show to start this show because we believed that the American economy had been so suppressed, not depressed, but suppressed by the Obama administration with all of its regulations and penalties and everything else, that we saw very little economic growth over the 8 years of the president's two terms. And we felt that with Mr. Trump coming in, being more of a businessman and a person who wanted to cut regulations to make America free or freer to do business, that there was going to be an upsurge in people interested in taking risk and wanting to start new businesses. Has there been any change in the number of people buying your service?
That's a really interesting question. There has not been any difference that we could perceive based on the change in the administration. Our company has continued to grow, and you know it's on the same trajectory it's been on continually, which is to say a very, very steep uphill trajectory. But it's doing incredibly. The company's doing very well, growing and growing and growing. But there hasn't been a change in the administration. I think it's interesting, though, because there are a few notes and a couple of things in there. You said it, you know, it's a sort of political question, because the one thing that has been on our mind a lot is, again, going back to this notion of these non-employer small businesses, the 23 million of them in the country, is that, you know, we've been talking to a lot of people who are very concerned about benefits, about healthcare coverage and accessing other types of benefits that other types of workers get to access. So this notion of portable benefits, and it's actually one thing that people have become more concerned about under the current administration, is that they're not going to be able to have access to healthcare. And what we're concerned with is that could potentially encourage people to stay in jobs, you know, that they don't want, to not pursue their passions, to not go out and start, a new business, take that risk to become an author or take that risk to become a graphic designer or do whatever, pursue a passion, that they're being locked into jobs when they don't have access to benefits. So,
yeah.
Again, we haven't noticed any difference, but it is something that's on our radar.
You know, it's interesting. When I listened to the Obamacare debate in the House and the Senate, and I couldn't help but ask a question, and that is it the responsibility of the central government to provide health care to everybody?
It's a fair question.
Yeah, and I'm in the camp that says, where does it say in the Constitution that everybody has a right to health care? And, you know, maybe the problem with what's going on is that we're asking the wrong question. Maybe we should be asking the question as small business people, not whether our employees need health care. There's no question about that. But should the government at all be involved in telling us what we have to provide in health care benefits for our employees?
You know, I think that's a fair question. I would ask you a question, which is a sort of similar. Is it the right way? Is it right that the employer that should be the entity that provides the benefits? I think it's the perspective of Fiverr is that more small business would happen if people could access benefits on their own, if they could afford them and access them as individuals, and that they were truly portable. No matter where they went, the benefits stayed with them, whatever, if it was their health care or their life insurance or any of these other things that sometimes are tied to, you know, 401ks and things that are sometimes tied to employment, that really tethering those to traditional employment is kind of an outdated model. So if that's just something I would ask you back.
Well, I would say to you that the idea of portability between employers, I'd have to think really long and hard about that, because the only way that you can provide for, quote, universal health care and portability in health care is if the government provides it. You have to have a single provider, because if you don't have a single provider, then the variances from one supplier to the other creates a problem. Now, if you had, as Mr. Trump has suggested, if we had competition across state borders and we didn't have these kinds of restrictions of the state insurance commissions, then if an employee, the company that's doing business, whether it's Aetna or United Healthcare, whoever, is doing business in all 50 states, then it becomes possible for that United Healthcare employee to take those benefits across the United States. Right now, you can join AARP anywhere in the country, and you can get their Medicare supplement program, and it's good in all 50 states. One place, one policy provided by an insurance company. So it's possible to do that without the government if you open up the restrictions and eliminate the restrictions based on borders. I don't know how quickly that's going to happen. But I want to go back to the differences. You said that your survey showed that your interpretation of the survey is that the issues that are important to small business are not important to what's being said by the politicians, either locally or in the federal government, meaning that big business, which is a small portion of the total employment in the United States, has more influence of moving the agenda one way or the other.
Yeah, it would certainly seem, and I think that's a fair interpretation. I mean, and one of my interpretations of the results was that what should be most important is that policymakers, you know, they recognize that there's been a shift in the way people work and earn money, and that they need to consider ways to evolve, again, like the safety net, and they need to think a little bit more about the future of work. And if they were doing that, they would then be serving, again, this large 23 million small businesses that are really driving the economy right now. I mean, this idea of contingent workforce, this future of work that we were just talking about, that's that's what's happening. That's a real driver in this economy, and I think that more politicians need to be paying attention to it. Again, in the last political cycle, you know, both sides spending a lot of time talking about bringing back Rust Belt manufacturing jobs, and you know, bringing back coal mining and some of these older economy jobs. Now, there's nothing wrong with those jobs, nothing wrong with the people that do those jobs, but this other part of the country, this other part of the economy, rather, is growing, you know, incredibly rapidly, and the policymakers don't seem to be helping.
Yeah. How much time do we have,
Brent? Dan, I'd like to interrupt two things. Brent, your website again?
Fiverr, FIVERR.com, Fiverr.
And I'd like to get the last question in, which is, what was surprised you the most about the survey results?
Again, I think that really the most surprising thing was that, again, that sort of confusion in the prioritization with our leaders. And again, that is a bipartisan criticism. They're not focused on the things that are really going to spur this incredibly important, rapidly growing part of the economy, which are these sort of micro entrepreneurs, if you will, that are really driving growth. And so my hope would be in the future that policymakers would start to pay attention. My hope is that Fiverr can be a voice for them across the country.
Hmm. Well, we don't have any more time except to thank you. We've been talking with Brent Messenger. We hope he'll come back again and talk more about that in his company. Your website again, Brent, before we let you go?
Fiverr.com, FIVERR.com. And I just want to thank you both for having me on. It's been a great, great time. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Brent.
Thank you for the great information you brought. We'll be back with our next guest after this word.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late-night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called fintech lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like the change. I'm Dan Perkins for recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
Well, Dan, our next guest is Sunira Madani. She's founder and CEO of Fat Merchant. She's here to talk about the ways businesses can protect themselves from fraud and what the role of their credit card processor is when it happens. Sunira, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Dan and Don. Excited to be here.
Dan, you take it over. Go right ahead.
Credit card, first of all, thanks again for joining us. This is a subject that's always been of interest to me. I used to do contract negotiations with major affinity groups on credit card relationships. And so I know a little bit about that particular business. What is interesting to me is the difference in credit card protection in the United States, I'm saying now in general, versus credit card protection in Europe. Why is it, do you think, that Europe was so far ahead of us?
So, I mean, they've been in compliance. I mean, Europe has been PCI compliant, I mean, EMV compliant for, you know, decades. The United States is actually one of the last countries to actually take on EMV compliance. And I think it comes, like, from top down. We actually don't have a ton of regulation within the payment card industry, and that's by companies like Fat Merchant. We're changing that. We want more regulation. We want to have better compliance. We want our customers to be protected. And so, you know, other countries have been well advanced in terms of that, but also it's their banking networks as well that have allowed EMV adoption across across Europe. But I'm excited to tell you a little bit more about what we can do here in the United States and, you know, get our small businesses up to date on technology to protect from fraud.
I think that's a great point, because with the changes in the technology, I have seen on a local basis here in Southwest Florida, there are many places that have the chip readers but don't have chip capacity. And I've also seen some people already replaced their readers. So are there conflicts in the chip readers and the chip technology that's still not been fleshed out in the United States?
There are some, but not many. And I think it literally will come down to the business owner's decision of wanting to be EMV compliant, but also their processor's capability in allowing it. So there's a couple components to it, and that's one great way for business owners today to protect themselves against fraud is, one, just by being EMV compliant. And so EMV, are those little chips that we have. We all have them now. So the credit card companies have all issued us or should have issued us an EMV compliant credit card. And it's really important that we try to use it as much as we can, because we're protecting ourselves with other layers. Because every time that the card is dipped or inserted, it's actually a tokenized. There's a new number that can't be recreated or skimmed. And so the process is a little bit longer when you're standing in line or at the checkout and it's waiting for that authorization. But at the end of the day, it's protecting you as a cardholder, and it's also protecting the business from fraudulent activity. Now, in 2015 is when EMV adoption was supposed to take place nationwide. And I think with any sort of technology, it's going to take time for adoption. And so the way that the card brands have pushed out the rollout is that for EMV cards, if you're a business owner and you're not accepting chip-based and PIN-based cards, then you are held liable for the fraud that takes place at your location, at your retail store, or at the point of purchase. So you are actually held liable for that chargeback that may occur. Whereas if you are EMV compliant and fraud does take place and it was a chip card, then you are not liable for that transaction. So there was a shift in liability that took place in 2015. However, again, it's going to go back on adoption. Business owners have not fully, fully integrated, have accepted EMV. And a couple of the reasons that we see today from customers is, it's really slow and, it slows down my line, or it takes longer to take the transaction. Two, their current providers have locked them into really long leases of equipment for accepting, the credit card terminals, and they haven't been able to get out of contracts or been able to upgrade their technology. And my advice to these business owners is get compliant and find, a processor that is EMV compliant from end to end. So not just on the reader end, but also on the gateway end, et cetera. And so, for example, Fat Merchant, we are completely EMV compliant. We've actually been, since the inception of our business, we were doing EMV even before it was required that we had to do EMV. So all of our customers have EMV compliant terminals. They can take really cool technology like Apple Pay and Samsung Pay and anything else that may come about. They can take, swipe regular credit cards, but if the customer has a chip-enabled card, it will tell them, you have to insert the chip. And we even have that across the board, so it's not just on the terminals, but also even on mobile swipers, which is another thing that we're seeing in businesses, that they're accepting, they're taking transactions, but the mobile swipers are not EMV compliant. So that's another place that the technology has to, as a business owner, you have to really put that technology from end to end, and it's not expensive to do so.
So, Mary, Dan, let me interrupt for two things. First, tell us your website, but before you do, I have something across my desk from a listener. Can you slow down a little bit? You're saying so much valuable information that,
yes.
And we want to make sure we all hear it correctly. But first, start
Absolutely.
With your website.
Absolutely. So our website is fatmerchant.com. That's FATT merchant.com. merchant.com, MERCHANT.com. And FAT Merchant actually stands for Fast Affordable Transactions Technology. And just a really quick, just a little bit about us. We're the first subscription-based merchant services provider. So we've actually completely disrupted the payments industry and taken it on the head. I've been in the industry for, you know, a really long time, and I started off as an agent in payments. And I hated everything about the industry, from how the lack of transparency worked for customers, the crazy rates and fees that they're paying, the lack of regulation where banks and, you know, providers could increase their rates, lock them into these contracts, not provide technology. And it really wasn't, it's not advantageous to the business owner. And I never once met a business owner that was like, I love my credit card processor. I love the experience of my payment company. That you just don't hear that. You know, it's just a necessary evil that's taking 5% off of my bottom line. And that's something that we set out to change. And the way that we've done that is we give every business owner, regardless of their volume, direct access to Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express wholesale rates. So they're getting the rates that Walmarts are getting. They're getting the rates that Best Buys are getting. They never have to negotiate their rate again, because we don't make any money on the payments on the transaction itself. So we're not taking a cut of the transaction exactly how all the banks are taking it or merchant providers. Because traditionally, they are charging their own percentage on top of Visa's percentage. And at FAT Merchant, instead of charging the variable percentages, we give every business owner access to direct costs, but we ask for a monthly membership. So we're a subscription-based service. So our service is about $79.99 a month. And with that subscription, you get access to direct costs. You don't have a contract. You don't have to worry about statement fees or compliance fees. You get all the security, the tools, the membership, the EMV technology. So we have everything all included in the membership. And that's FAT Merchant. Again, that's FATTmerchant.com.
Wow. Dan, it's hard to ask a question after she's so complete like that. I'll let Dan go ahead. I'm sure you do.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
Let's just step back for a moment, and let's not make an assumption. I'm not saying that you are. I'm just saying in general. Let's not make an assumption. Take a few minutes to tell the American consumers that are listening to this program why the chip in their credit card makes them more secure.
So the way that the chip is designed, and the why it's more secure, is that every time that you run a transaction, it is authorizing that credit card, but the card number changes. It's tokenized every single time you run that credit card. And so unlike before, where you had a magnetic swipe on the back of the credit card, your credit card number is the same. So when you're going to swipe that card, anyone can take that credit card number and then charge it anywhere else, because it's the same card, whereas with EMV, it changes on every single transaction. And so even if somebody does get a hold of your credit card information, it's absolutely useless, because they can't run that number because it's tokenized. And that's why that's how it's protecting you as a consumer.
There was a story not too long ago in three unlikely places and I'm just quoting from the article, that there were, it didn't say whether legal or illegal, but they were operating in the state of Ohio, Kentucky, and Florida, probably other places. And they were breaking into the gasoline pumps and putting in their own readers to read the credit card numbers of people who were buying gas, because they were still using the magnetic tape to swipe with. And it's so bad that the various state agencies were suggesting that you not use your credit card, in fact, to pay cash for your gasoline, because of the insecurity of the readers in the gas pump. I'm sure there have been a lot of people, a lot of organizations that have switched to the chip reader. But, one organization that hasn't switched to the chip, at least not yet, United States Postal Service. When you walk into the post office, you got to swipe your card. and it can't read the chip. So there's still a lot of rollout to be done, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that EMV adoption, we're just in the, you know, in the beginning phases of it, and it's going to be one industry kind of at a time that's going to lead that way. And I still believe that we're still about 3 to 4 years out from that full adoption of EMV.
How much do you think?
You've seen bigger organizations, even such as Disney, that still don't have EMV, and they're choosing not to become EMV compliant because it's, you know, slow, you know, and their reasoning is the amount of fraud that is happening. You know, it's easier for them, it's more profitable for them not to be EMV compliant. So they're okay with taking on that fraud. And I think it's really important for every business to evaluate in terms of, you know, every business owner should know what their chargeback ratio is, how much fraud, you know, usually does take place in their place of business. And there are certain industry types that are more prone you know, to it than others. And so you should, you know, you really need to do your research as a business owner and align yourself with, you know, with the right technology as well as the right processor.
Don, do I have another time for a question?
Yeah. Yes, you do. You got one more question.
Okay. We've got to take a commercial break here shortly. So do you think as we get over the hump and we are more compliant and less compliant, will that have an impact on fraud?
Yes, it will have an impact on fraud. We're already seeing that impact on fraud. So as soon as EMV was rolled out, that's EMV is on card present transactions, right? So that's preventing fraud. You're, you know, dipping and inserting your card at a point of purchase. However, you saw fraud shift and then move online. And so there was still, you know, there's still fraud that's going to take place. But then the online business owners were targeted because EMV hasn't reached, you know, you can't put EMV, you know, it's on a card present situation. However, you know, you can put tools and things in place as a business owner. So even with online fraud, so even if it's not EMV, so EMV is something that you can do right away in your place of business if you have a, you know, if you have a retail style, or you're taking credit card transactions face to face. If you are an online retailer, even an online business, there are also tools that you can do, such as, you know, you can do address verification. You can ensure that you're asking for the CVV of the customer. You can have, you know, velocity limits. So, for example, if a customer is trying to run the card multiple amount of times, your system should be able to kind of stop that. So you can put limits even on the transactions per day or the ticket amounts. So there's tons of tools as a business owner that you can do to apply, and I highly, highly encourage every business owner to understand what tools are out there. And, you know, you can come, you know, feel free to reach out to us at Fat Merchant. We provide all of these tools in all of our technology. So we've been really ahead in terms of, you know, in terms of fraud prevention, and we already have all these tools in place when it comes to for e-commerce stores, even for customers taking invoices, to add that address verification, to add those hard limits. It's really important to have, you know, be with a processor that, you know, can provide you with all these technologies to help protect your business.
I know we're
vendor for free.
Okay. Well, we have to stop here a moment to hear from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back with
Sanera Madani
from Fat Merchant. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Before you hear this or this, or even this. Before you turn a key, step on the gas and let it rip. Before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We've been asked recently by a number of people, how can they listen to past shows? And if you go to recalculating.biz, you'll find a link to iHeartRadio, which will allow you to go back and listen to shows that you didn't get a chance to finish or never heard. So we encourage you to go there, recalculating.biz.
We're here with Sanera Madani of Fat Merchant. We're talking about credit card fraud, how to prevent it, and we're back to you, Dan.
Thank you, Sanera. The other thing I wanted to ask you about before we went into the break was, we talked a little bit about fraud. What about identity theft? Can your program help with identity theft?
No, we're not focused on identity theft in terms of we deal with payment side of the business. So we help businesses get set up with their credit card processing, and we can help, you know, prevent fraud on the credit card end, but not on, like, I can't help somebody if their identity gets stolen online. There's other tools that, you know, you can, you know, there's other companies and tools that can help with that, but that's not something that we do at Fat Merchant.
You mentioned, go ahead, Don.
No, I was going to go a totally different direction then. And how did you get into this business, and how did you come to found the company, and what are some of the obstacles you overcame?
That's a great question. It's actually probably the one that people ask me the most. Fat Merchant, I started this company out of frustration. So I was working in the payments industry, selling merchant services to small businesses in Orlando, Florida. And I loved working with small businesses. Any way that I wanted to help a small, and I come from a family of small businesses, and it's just a big passion of mine, helping small businesses. But I hated the product that I was selling, and that was merchant services. And the reason why I hated selling it too much was because, one, it was a commoditized business, and there's way too many people with the same exact pitch of, let me see your credit card statement, I can beat your rate. And the reason why everyone can beat each other's rates is that Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express, they set the rates every year, and that's known as interchange. And that those rates are the same across the board for every provider. So it didn't matter if it was the company that I was working with at the time, it's First Data, it's Bank of America, SunTrust, Fat Merchant, PayPal, Stripe, whoever it may be, Visa sets the rates every year. But how credit card processing companies make money is that they charge an additional percentage on each and every transaction of that business owner. And when I learned that cost was the same for every provider, and as a millennial that's subscribing to every product now under the sun that you can think of, I was like, why can't subscription be applied to payments, where every retailer and business owner gets access to direct cost, just like Walmart does, and they don't have to negotiate their rates every year like they have to, and no one can come in and undercut it. And so we're the first subscription-based merchant services provider where we give everyone 0% markup, like 0%. We have no actual rate for our credit cards. We give every business owner access to direct costs. So it's kind of like a wholesale club, like Costco, but for payments. And we're able to save business owners 30 to 40% on their credit card processing fees. I mean, that's what we do. You can go to fatmerchant.com, check it out. You can do a savings analysis. You can do a savings analysis directly yourself, or you can send us a copy of your one-month statement, and we can show you exactly how we're able to, you know, save you money, and it's down to the transaction end. So I hated the industry that I was in, and I took the idea back to my old bosses, and they laughed in my face and said, why would we want to, you know, sell a product with no contract? Why would we want to provide technology and security technology and fraud technology and free EMV terminals to customers? And, you know, also, you know, why would you want to save them the amount of money that you're, you know, asking us to save them and charge a flat fee? So I decided to quit and start my own payments company. And it's been, 3 years since we launched Fat Merchant. However, we're backed by Vantiv, which is, what, you know, the largest payment transaction house, you know, in the United States today. And we launched the company, and we gained so much recognition for our disruptive pricing model and for the technology. And for the last 3 years, I mean, we've already processed, we're not a tiny company by any means. We've already processed $1 billion in transactions, year to date already. And we're, you know, we've received tons and tons of awards for our tremendous model, our disruptive pricing model, as well as for our technology. And we can integrate with any way the business is doing payments today.
Well, yeah, you've in effect possibly disrupted a 30 or 40 year industry. What obstacles did you have to overcome?
I mean, so many obstacles. I mean, one is, you know, fundraising for the business, and so, you know, where do you even start a payments company? Where do you go find Mr. Visa? And so, just kind of getting through the regulation hump in 2013 was its own battle. And then going from there, I mean, we've raised, you know, a good amount of venture capital to help, you know, fuel and fund the company. But the way that we bootstrapped the company was we actually, you know, applied to every pitch competition and business competition that we could get our names in. And we ended up winning over $200,000 in prize money. And that's how we fueled and, like, bootstrapped the business. And when we received, we got a ton of press from, like, Fast Company, from Forbes, TechCrunch, you know, I mean, you name it, Fortune. And from there, that kind of, you know, our phones just have, you know, never stopped ringing. And we validated that, you know, we have an amazing concept and we want to bring transparency to every business owner. One of the best stats, I mean, we put back over $10 million in the last, you know, just in the last 3 years, just in Central Florida, like back in our own backyard from savings from processing. So we're really excited about what we do.
Dan, back to you.
One of the things that I'm curious about is when you start a business, and I've worked with people in starting businesses, almost exactly at the same time you start it, you begin to think about their exit strategy. Do you have an exit strategy as the founder and owner of this business?
I think that, you know, there may be, you know, potential exits for the company, but our goal is to bring Fat Merchant. I want Fat Merchant to be a household name. And so, you know, for us, we're competing directly against the banks, against the big guys, and we've made a name for ourselves. And so for Fat Merchant, we're just, you know, we're here to not worry about the exit in mind, but to build a really, really great company.
Isn't the processing part of the business seen a lot of startups come and a lot of startups who start to become successful and begin to interfere with the pricing model being given opportunities to exit the market?
Are you asking if that's what I'm seeing or is that? I'm sorry,
no.
I didn't follow the question.
In my years of experience of working in the credit card business, processors start up, they develop a niche for themselves, and typically what happens that I've seen, I'm not saying in all cases, but in many cases, they wind up being purchased by a bigger processor just on the basis of the bigger processor trying to eliminate competition. But they make it so lucrative for the people to sell, it's hard to say no.
I mean, you know, definitely that does take place. I haven't seen any processors, you know, personally in my experience, buy out another processor because of their price. They're usually acquiring another book of business because they're really focused on like an industry vertical or they have customers that this processor wants to acquire. But there are definitely tons of strategic exit opportunities as well. I mean, our goal and our mission and vision for the company is to provide its payment world domination with the best, you know, experience is what we call it. And so for us, we want to get these banks to, we want to shake it up and show that, you know, it doesn't have to be the 30-year-old way. And we're not looking to get out of the way anytime soon. So we're looking to continue to on our model of transparency.
How much time do we have, Don?
You've got about time for one more question and one more answer.
So let me take you in a little bit different direction. There's a lot of press and a lot of ballyhoo that Bitcoin is going to replace cash and credit. What do you think?
I think that cash is definitely something that is going to be obsolete. So that's my personal opinion. And, you know, I do believe that there's not going to be a need for cash. And for Bitcoin, I think that Bitcoin will definitely, you know, our cryptocurrency, whether it's Bitcoin or other types of currencies, I do believe that they will have a presence in the marketplace. But I also believe in other forms of payments as well. So I do see a shift in like that technology will bring in terms of and for the consumer end for payments from the business end of payments. And businesses need to be ready to adopt these forms of payment because cash is becoming less and less used. I mean, we could just see even just from plastic, even with credit cards, you know, over the last 10 years on how that's evolved. And so I do feel that there will be a home for these cryptocurrencies and other types of currencies and other mobile payments too. I mean, that's something that we're not taking, you know, that you know, as consumers, we're starting to adopt even more, but business owners aren't still fully accepting of mobile payments. You're going to see that. And so, you know, as a business owner, you should be thinking about these things to be able to accept all forms of payment. And that's what, you know, that's what we help business owners do. Like with FatMerchant, you can accept, you know, EMV transactions, you can accept Apple Pay, you can accept Samsung Pay, whatever's going to come, you need to be with a processor that's ahead of that technology so that however it is, you're able to collect that transaction from that customer. But I don't think it'll be Bitcoin that's going to take over the world. However, I do think that there's going to be non-cash currencies and cash will be obsolete.
Well, wish we had more time. We've been talking with Sunira Madani. She's founder and CEO of FatMerchant. And, she's all about reducing our merchants' costs and providing better services. So, Sunira, please tell us your website again, and thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm so glad to be here, and I'm, you know, always get excited to talk about payments in any capacity. So you can go to our website at fatmerchant.com. That's FATTmerchant.com. Again, www.fatmerchant.com. And we have all the EMV tools for you, the security tools for you. And we'll save you a ton of money. So give us, go online and talk to one of our payment consultants about your business, even if you don't want to sign up. But, get educated, and learn about what your options are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Matt, a link to her website will be on our website tomorrow. In the meantime, a word from our sponsor before we hear from Dan.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Should I grow my business or stay the size that I am? One of the most difficult decisions about a small business is should I try to grow it? And if I want to grow, what is the best way to do it? If you look at the internet, you can find lots of advice on how to expand your business. So here's your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Go to the SBA.gov website and you'll find 10 ideas of how to grow your business. They're not in order of importance, they're just 10 ideas. Some may be more suitable, others may not, for you and your business. The one that struck me was add another store. My brother-in-law started with one pizza shop, and over the last 15 years, he's grown to five. You may not have a storefront, but a service business. So look at your competitors and see if they might be willing to sell or merge with you. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
Well, Dan, we've come to the end of another show. What do you think?
All right. I had a good time. Interesting that were two things that I knew a lot about, the Fiverr and then the credit card processing side. So it was interesting. I'm glad she talked to the consumer about the advantages of the chip. And the Fiverr, I think that I hope a lot of our listeners who are thinking about resources that they might need in their small business. I found them, the people that I work with, to be very accommodative and were competitive. In fact, actually got into a little bit of a bidding process. At one time, I had five people bidding on the illustrations for Peter the Little Irish Seal. So the thing I like about Fiverr, you can get talent without having to hire the talent. That means your money can go farther. You can give yourself a look of a big company with a small amount of dollars. So I was very pleased with the content on the show today.
Well, we now just have time for two things: for you to say goodbye, and so say goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye, Dan.
And remember, recalculating, helping to keep you on the road to success.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to help you be successful.